Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talkback Gardening. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Deb Tribe, and good morning to gardeners. Or should say a very good morning to gardeners that like the thought of being able to grow their own fresh, delicious blackberries or blueberries. Or have you heard of a tayberry?
I haven't.
Also be very delicious and worth growing in your garden. Now, the nice thing about berries is they don't have a great big framework or trellis. They can grow in a relatively small space. So let's explore the potential of growing fresh, delicious fruit in your own garden. And the person who's going to help that with that is Mark Henley. Mark Henley is a very enthusiastic member of the South Australian Rare Fruit Society, currently the Vice President. You've been President before in the past, though, Mark.
Good morning, Mark. G'day, John. G'day, Deb. Good to talk to you.
Yeah. And, of course, many people probably will recognise the voice because he's very much involved with other issues earlier on.
That is quite right. I mean, I've spoken to you many times over the years, Mark, through your work with Uniting Communities. You're now working with the Energy Regulator. So lots of different hats, but today you've got the Rare Fruits Society hat on. So we'll come to you in just a moment. We're already getting lots of texts from people who are having lots of berry success.
Yes.
And love to hear from you on that.
And after we talk to Mark and we get some feedback from listeners, we'll talk to Brett Draper about the show, 2 weeks' time, why you could be and should be there enjoying the programs.
You know, I almost entered something this year. I'll have a chat when we catch up. And of course, I have two August ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away later as well. But we'd like your berry questions right now. We've got Mark here. If you'd like to call in, the number is 1300 222 891. If you'd like to send a text on your berry success, we'd love to receive that as well on 0467 922 891. Just a quick one to get things going. Gail says, my late mum made gin out of sloe berries, S-L-O-E, and I'd never heard of them.
Okay, g'day. Look, sloes are very much an English hedgerow thing, so I don't know exactly what they are, to be honest, but I'm not aware of them being available in Australia, but no doubt they're around the place.
Well, you never know what...
Not like the berries we're going to talk to Mark about.
Yeah, and I suppose, I mean, berries is such a broad category. We're mainly talking today about the rubus family.
The rubus, which, what I call the soft and delicious ones.
Well, I mean, but, you know, blueberries, saskatoons, all those things are separate again, so there's a whole lot of families. So we're just talking really about rubus, which is a member of the rose family, of course.
I think we've got a very interesting program coming up.
Wow, member of the rose family. You've already increased my knowledge. And Chris just says, good morning. Gooseberries are extremely easy to grow and they self-seed and pop up everywhere in the garden.
On the plains?
Doesn't say where.
Doesn't
Chris,
say,
tell
yes.
us where you're texting from, please. And
yes,
we'll
and the importance
you know.
Of getting the right climate for the right kind of berry, I think, will come out in the program as we talk to Mark. In fact, why don't we actually say, Mark, let's take a look at the potential for growing what I call those soft berry-type fruits, the blackberries, the thought horror of growing a berry bush in your garden. Is there a potential for home gardeners to be able to grow their own fresh fruit, particularly here on the plains?
The very short answer, of course, is yes. And I can point to people that are growing boysenberries in particular on the plains. Now, what you need to do is to recognise that most of the rubus genus are cooler climate berries, very diverse genus. But to grow them, I think you need some trellis. So a couple of poles, 2 metres high, with a couple of wires between them, and that gives a bit of structure for the brambles to grow on. It makes pruning easier. It makes pest management easier. So with that sort of structure, like with, you know, even 5-6 metres of trellis, of basically wire.
Well, come back to all of those.
You can
things,
basically but... grow a large number of particularly boysenberries, silvanberries, things like that.
All right, you used the word brambles, and I suppose that's what we're talking about, is a brambleberry, a thing that sort of has a root system and sends out these great big long tendrils, and those tendrils then have leaves and lovely fruit on them. Could we use the blackberry as an example of what's happened? I mean, nobody in their right mind will put a feral blackberry bush in their back or front garden. But what the breeders have done is nobody's business. So let's take a look at today's modern blackberry.
Right, and you're absolutely right. I mean, the irony is that yesterday my wife was cutting and dabbing the wild blackberries, the feral blackberries, in our blackberry patch. So that's the reality. And you're right, that there's been breeding of brambles for a very long time. And the big centres have been in the United States, in Oregon in particular. So there's North American brambles. Places in Europe, there's been research stations there. And, of course, in Australia, we've had a research station breeding in Sylvan. So there's a number of hybrids of blackberries. So my favourite is the boysenberry, which is a hybrid of blackberry and, frankly, a whole lot of other things. We've got Sylvan berries, which are also a hybrid with some blackberry parentage, and they'll both grow very well here. Then we've got even more recent varieties of thornless blackberries, totally thornless, grow on big, long, vigorous canes, and so you'll see them in the nurseries as, I think, Chester and Waldo are the two varieties of thornless blackberries.
Of a thornless blackberry. Mm. So let's describe the blackberry bush, the modern compact hybrid blackberry bush. What do you get?
Right, well, again, there's both a more compact form and the more vigorous form. What you basically, I mean, you buy this time of year a bare-rooted plant, or some sell them in pots. You put them in an ostrich soil, and each sort of autumn, they will throw great big canes out. And you're The role of the grower is to pick up those canes, bundle them up on the wires, and then you cut back the fruit that, or the canes that are dying that are fruited this season. And so you've got to maintain these canes, because each season you've got fresh canes, and that's where your fruit's going to come from.
So whether it's a blackberry or a boysenberry,
yep,
or a loganberry, basically you've got a single plant with these long laterals on them.
Yep.
How big, how tall, and how wide are we looking at?
Well, see, that's why I keep coming back to the trellis really matters. So something like thornless Chester blackberry, I mean, that throws canes 3-4 metres long.
But you can keep them...
But, yeah, absolutely, you can cut them right back.
Yes.
So, I mean, generally you're looking at canes probably 2 to 3 metres with an average bramble, and again, you've a bit of framework, you tie them up really easily. But they also sucker, so you've got to keep knocking the suckers off so that you just have them growing in the area you want to grow them.
So they're the kind of plant that are easy to grow, but you've got to not just grow and forget.
Easy to grow, but a little bit of management's necessary.
Yes. Yep. Deb, are we starting to get some...
No, we've got lots of comments. I'll just deal with sloes first, because I'm getting some texts on that. Sloes are plums, says this person. Sloes in Tasmania, sends another. But Lee says slow berries are European. They look like purple olives and are put in gin to make slow gin. So
okay,
there you
well,
go.
There we are. That's what Mark was talking about.
Yeah, I think that makes sense to me, that they are a sort of almost like a seedling plum.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Now, Rachel from Back Valley near Victor says, I've been growing a loganberry bush for many years. Every Christmas we'd get loads of delicious big berries. Everyone came over and we'd go out to the loganberry and eat handfuls of them. But last Christmas we didn't get any. But I haven't pruned it properly and it's got away from me. It's hard because it's full of prickles, has many runners. I've pruned it half back. What's the correct way to prune? And, of course, that's exactly what you were just talking about there, the maintenance that's needed.
Yeah, and also I would say last couple of years with the La Nina weather patterns, we've had poor pollination with all sorts of fruit, including berries. So I would say if you didn't get much fruit last year, wait for the warmer seasons and that they should pick up. But the simple way to prune brambles and most raspberries as well is to you prune in late autumn, and you basically cut back all the canes that have produced fruit this year.
Okay, so let's take a look. There's a blackberry, or it's a youngberry,
yep,
and in springtime it's sent up maybe 6 or 8 of these long, what do we kind of call them?
Well,
they're not branches,
what
they're
happens
laterals.
Is that they produce canes,
really, okay,
in autumn. So the canes are growing in autumn, so you're picking them up late autumn, and that's the best time to be cutting out the canes that are fruited this year.
All right, so in autumn they make these new canes.
Yep.
And in the meantime, the old canes have had fruit on them. And you're saying at the end of autumn, you cut off all the old canes that have had fruit on them?
Correct.
Every one of them?
Yep.
Absolutely. So you're left with all these lovely new canes.
Green and vigorous, yep.
Okay. And so where does the fruit come on the new canes?
Right. So basically, brambles are generally referred to as floricanes. And floricane means that they throw up a primary cane, and then there's the secondary canes, which are the smaller canes.
It's like little side branches.
Little side branches come off, and that's where the fruit comes.
And that's this, okay. That's so where the fruit comes. The cane grows,
yep.
And then it sends out these little side branches,
yep.
And it's on those side branches you get the fruit.
Absolutely. Right-o.
And at the end of the season, you chop them all off.
Cut them
because
right
there's
back.
New ones there.
Yep.
Right-o. So that's how you look after them and prune them. And so we can then come maybe to the trellis. How big does that trellis need to be, say, for a blackberry or for a youngberry?
If you're in the backyard, I would have thought 5 to 7 metres length of trellis is going to give you plenty of fruit. And all you need is simply a couple of poles with a couple of wires running between those poles at about, 1 metre, 1.6 metres height. So you just run two wires. So you've got length, but very narrow width. So you're only taking half a metre width at most.
Can you put the trellis up against a wall?
Provided it's not a metal fence.
Okay, you've got reflective heat.
The wall needs to be brick or something that's not going to be radiating much heat, because on the plains in particular, that's the killer of brambles, is those scorching hot summer days.
Yes.
And they don't like those.
So
and
if you're going to put it against a wall, you'd come out maybe a metre and you get air flowing around either side.
Get the air flowing. And, if there's going to be reflective heat, I'd be inclined to put a bit of shade cloth, frankly, between the wall and the berries.
Which wall would you put it against? One that gets the morning sun or afternoon sun, or doesn't it matter?
I'd be facing it to the east.
Get the morning sun.
Get the morning sun, because it's the afternoon sun.
And just on that question of gooseberries, the grower, Chris, that had a lot of success, is just text back. He says, I am in Flagstaff Hill.
Okay.
So there you go. Cameron has called in from Port Lincoln on gooseberries as well. Good morning, Cameron.
Good morning, all. Yes, I've got 3 Cape gooseberries growing in my backyard. I've grown them from the little berries you get from the supermarket, actually. And I was just inquiring about when to prune them back, as at the moment they are full of fruit.
Yeah, and Cape gooseberry are different from what we might call an English gooseberry, so they're quite different fruit, similar common name. Cape gooseberries are actually a member of the tomato family, and they are very vigorous, and they'll frankly fruit pretty much any time of the year. So my suggestion is to just cut them back whenever you need to, because they are vigorous and they'll take over and they will just keep fruiting.
All right, and we come back to the ordinary gooseberry or the standard or English gooseberry. And again, we're talking brambles, and brambles make canes, whereas a gooseberry bush to me is something that has almost like a little mini tree. It has a structure. It has a main trunk and side branches, and that's permanent, and you prune that back or as you like, maybe a dwarf fruit tree.
Yeah. And again, gooseberries I put in the similar category to currants, which are the ribes family. Mm. And again, they're small to medium bushes, and you prune them, as you say, much more like a small fruit tree. So you're pruning for shape, and they'll keep growing year in, year out. But of course, you'll look out for the older canes and you cut them out too, so that you've got fresh canes coming through or fresh branches coming through pretty regularly.
Of the brambles, the blackberries, loganberries and boysenberries, which would be the most adaptable to the plains region?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be starting, if I'm on the plains, I'm starting with boysenberries.
Boysenberry.
I mean, they've got a very complex parentage, but they're robust, they grow well, very few pests and diseases. If they've got air circulation, and they produce like lots of fruit, like you're talking 3-4 kilograms per meter, if you like.
Righto. And so a boysenberry obviously has got a blackberry. So what's it look like? A blackberry, a super sized blackberry, or what's it look like, and what's it taste like?
Fantastic is the short answer there. I mean, if you look at Boysenberry, it's got some raspberry in its parentage, it's got some dewberry, some loganberry, so quite complex flavours. It's a flavour all of its own. I'd be saying it looks like a big blackberry.
Big blackberry,
but
yeah.
Each of the individual segments are smaller, so they're quite big clusters of fruit. I think it can be up to a couple of centimetres long, so they're a bit elongated, and a beautiful, I don't know, rich berry red colour.
Yes, I love berries, and during winter I buy frozen berries, yeah. Simply because, you know, they're picked fresh, they're frozen very, very quickly, and so, you know, the goodness is still there, and you get packets of them, and there's these big things that look like a big blackberry, and I just assume that that's what they are.
Yeah, that's poison berries.
Yeah.
Certainly one of the biggest of the brambles. Delicious flavour, but again, there's other flavours, or there's others like the Sylvan Berry, an Australian developed hybrid of blackberry.
Linda from Sandy Creek has called in on 1300 222 891 to speak to our special guest Mark Henley from the Rare Fruits Society. Linda, you would like to ask a question about blackberry.
Yes, I just bought a thornless variety yesterday, and I'm wondering where would be the best location to plant it.
Good choice, Linda. You were at Flagstaff Hill, were you?
Sandy Creek.
Look, again, the main thing is plant it somewhere where it's not going to be blasted by summer heat. So give it as much sort of friable, composted soil as you can. They like rich soil. But plant it anywhere where there's perhaps a little bit of shade, or where you can provide a bit of protection in the middle of that Sandy Creek summer.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to having some fruit.
And again, I'd be saying, even if you're using a couple of stakes, give it some structure.
Yes, I will do that. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Linda. Lots of text questions coming in. This texter asks us to bury the berry puns now, as in B-U-R-Y, but asks, how do you protect these beautiful, delicious bushes that not only we love, but rodents love? Tricky.
Well, I think for me, good quality bird netting is the only solution. Certainly for me in the hills, everything wants to eat my berries. And so I basically comprehensively net.
Okay. And this texter says, we here in Mitcham have had 5 varieties of very productive blueberry bushes in large pots with acid potting mix. We have many blueberries from September to February every year for the past 6 years. Our 2 Cape gooseberry plants last year were also very productive but grew to a height of 2 metres, which we've had to prune back to 0.5 metre in January. However, we're not certain if we have over-pruned them, as they both have many dead stems with little regrowth. How should Cape gooseberries be pruned?
Yeah, I'd be saying with the Cape gooseberries, they're such vigorous plants. Just take out the dead sections and keep giving them a reasonably general fertiliser, and I'd expect they'll bounce back very solidly in spring.
We'll take one more call before we move along. Anne is in Aldgate, and you've got a raspberry question, Anne. Welcome.
Hi. Sorry, good morning, everyone. Yes, I've had raspberries in a raised bed for about 5 years, and I'm not getting any real good cropping off them because I really don't know how to prune them. So I've tried various methods of pruning them, taking them right down to the ground, taking them up higher. I'm obviously doing something wrong.
And certainly it sounds like pruning is the issue. And the dilemma here is it's good to know what variety you've got because raspberries come in 2 forms. Primacanes, which produce, and these are the autumn fruiting forms, and they produce fruit in autumn. And for them, you just cut them back each winter.
Right.
And the others you plant are floricanes, which you prune in the way I've described already, which is you bundle up the canes in autumn, and then they'll produce fruit in summer on the secondary shoots.
Just on that one. So it depends on, you've either got a raspberry that fruits in summer, or autumn, and once you know that, you prune according to which one you've got.
Yep. That said, my quick advice would be cut everything back to the ground, wait for them to grow, trellis them, and then see what happens and when they fruit.
Well, that's interesting because Ali from Inman Valley is saying, are raspberry pruned the same, taking out old canes in late autumn?
Absolutely, particularly for the summer fruiting, the floricanes of the raspberry family.
We are talking berries. Hope your Saturday is going very well at the moment. Our special guest is Mark Henley from the Rare Fruits Society. If you have a question for him, call in on 1300 222 891. Getting many comments on the text line on 0467 922 891.
Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
It is a very lovely Talk Back Gardening this morning. We are talking berries with Mark Henley from the Rare Fruits Society. John, we're getting a lot of questions, but there is a lot of ground to cover, isn't there?
Just a couple of very important issues. Berries grow very well on the hills, and the big factor there is the quantity of organic matter in the soil. So if you're growing them here on the plains, how important is it, Mark, to make sure you've got heaps of good quality compost in the soil?
Exceedingly important, John, and look, as you know, with any gardening, just add compost, but particularly with berries, they're surface feeders, they're vigorous, and they need a fair bit of fertiliser. So plenty of compost, keep the moisture up, keep the soil friable, so yeah, just keep adding compost.
How important is mulching?
Yeah, same thing. Again, particularly in our hot, dry summers, because they're the killers, particularly on the plains, of berries. So keeping some shade and keeping plenty of mulch around the plant so that you're maintaining moisture, critical.
All right. You can imagine, you know, it's hot and there's the root system and it's surface rooted, so yep. The organic matter in the soil and the mulch on the soil is going to keep them cool.
Yep.
But you mentioned the heat, though. How important is shade cloth, maybe, is that going to be, or is this a heat wave going to be the Achilles heel, and will shade cloth overcome the problem?
Certainly shade cloth will help reduce the direct heat and reduce the baking of the bushes. And again, the worst case scenario for berries on the plains is those late January, February heat waves, and they really need some help to get through those. So that's where plenty of mulch and some shade cloth, and keep the water up.
Lou at Royal Park asks, can you top up soil around berries when they are dormant?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Now, Rachel's I've already read out. Roseworthy. Blackberries won't grow well at Roseworthy. Is there a berry that will?
Again, Roseworthy, I'd be starting with boysenberry or sylvanberry, one of those.
What's a sylvanberry?
Sylvanberry is a hybrid developed at the Sylvan Research Station in Sylvan, Victoria, and it's another hybrid of blackberries and a bit of raspberry and a bit of all sorts of other things in there. But they're reasonably hardy, but it looks like a blackberry if you see it on the bush.
And while we're talking varieties, Tayberry, what's a Tayberry?
Well, Tayberry is a variety that was developed by the research station on the Tay River in Scotland. So it's a Scottish bred hybrid of basically blackberry and raspberry.
Delicious.
And I think they're stunning. But they're very soft fruit, so you won't see them in the shops.
Okay. Karen from the Adelaide Hills says, I haven't been able to purchase a blueberry bush in nurseries because of a disease interstate. Are there any growers here in South Australia?
We do get blueberry bushes coming through into the nurseries. It's a bit seasonal. Sometimes they'll have them, sometimes they won't. So I think just, again, keep going to the nurseries and looking and seeing what they've got and ask them.
Yes, that's been echoed by Ria, yes, on the text line
as
well.
And on that particular point, there's an evergreen blueberry burst. It's actually produced here in South Australia by the people that produce our apple and pear trees and fruit trees. So blueberry burst, it's evergreen, and it's got better tolerance to sort of, I won't say alkaline soils, but still needs acid soil, and we need to talk pHs, but yep, perhaps more tests.
There are more questions than I can possibly put to you, Mark, or we'd have you here for the next half an hour. But this texter asks, loganberries fruit on second-year canes. Are all berries the same?
It's the secondary canes, and it's actually the 1 year, so it's not a second-year cane, but it is a secondary cane, but it comes on I'll keep moving on.
Well, Wendy,
all brambles are the same.
Right.
Yes.
Wendy from Semaphore says, are there any native berries that can be grown in coastal areas about a kilometre from the beach?
Yes, there's actually 8 members of the rubus family that are indigenous to Australia. A number of them are from northern Australia. The one I'm most familiar with is Rubus parvifolius, which does produce fairly small berries. I think it needs some more selection and hybridisation work. But that's certainly a native raspberry that will grow here quite vigorously.
Betty says, we grow in the Mallee Logan berries, which taste like blackberry and raspberry combined, delicious and thornless. Betty, sounds wonderful. David in Stirling says, I cut my raspberries back to half after summer fruiting and then get a second crop in autumn.
Yeah, and that would be what's called a dual cropping variety.
Great, okay. Carolyn from Gawler says, can you grow any berry plants in pots? We don't have a back garden, only raised beds and pots.
Yeah, I would suggest that blueberries are probably the best option for growing in pots. But, you know, strawberries, of course, is something else that we forget about as a great all-purpose berry.
So, there are lots of different kind of berries that we can grow, and we can't cover them all, but the basics, I suppose, and we've talked about the importance of getting the soil right, organic soil, but it's the pH of the soil also. I've always been taught that you can't grow berries on alkaline soils, and our soils here in Adelaide probably would be around about that 7.5 to 8.5 would be sort of very, very general, and some are above 8.5, what's the tolerance of the berries to alkaline soils?
I mean, generally berries, as you say, are looking at a pH of 6 to 7, but particularly the blackberries and the blackberry hybrids, they'll cope quite happily with up to 7.5 sort of pH. So again, because it's surface rooted, by just adding lots of compost, you go, and then if you're on a really sort of higher alkaline soil, sprinkle a bit of organic sulphur, that's going to bring the pH down back to something like 7.5, and they'll be fine.
So it's possible to manage, yeah. And you mentioned that compost, the value of having lots of compost in the soil. It's the forgiver when you've got sort of hostile soils, particularly sort of alkaline soils. If you've got plenty of organic matter there, it tends to hold on to the nutrients that the plants need.
And we'll bring that pH down a bit closer to 7.
Okay, just finally, Ashton says, I'm still a bit confused. They grow a main cane, which then sprouts side canes. Do we cut back just the side canes after fruiting, or both the side and main canes?
The whole lot.
The whole lot. There you go, Ashton. And Rhea says, it would be nice to hear more about common berries we're growing, such as blueberries and strawberries. Are strawberries part of the rubus family as well?
No.
So different plant
different
than
family.
What we're talking about today, Rhea. Lorraine from Laura has sent through apparently a case study about pollination awareness for rubus. We can't read that at the moment, Lorraine, but thank you for doing that. And Michael says the best way to prune a blackberry or blueberry is to get a goat.
Well, not great for fruit, though.
No,
you might enjoy the milk, perhaps, and make some cheese from it. But I think probably having plants growing in your own garden, and it's the concept, I think, of having a bush that will grow and produce fruit in your own home garden and produce luscious fruit is, I think, one that we can dream of. And with the right kind of management, it become a reality. Mark Henley, thank you most kindly for being part of our program. And I just thank the Rare Fruit Society. You've got some wonderful members up there, some great information, and they're willing to share it. So thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a great society. Look us up on the website. Just Google Rare Fruit Society of South Australia.
And become involved, a great way, because I know how much knowledge you share with people that join. So
it's a big club. It's a big group now.
Yeah, great. Mark, lovely to see you again. Thanks so much for coming in.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Mark Henley from the Rare Fruits Society of South Australia. We'll be getting back into your general talk back gardening calls next. So call in on 1300 222 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
If you've got a question for John, call in now on 1300 222 891. Rob in Lower Mitcham has done just that. Now, Rob, your walnuts not doing too well.
Well, yes, good morning. Yes, good morning. I've got a grand old walnut tree in my back garden. Its girth would have to be at least 600 mil across the diameter. And it's just had a fantastic canopy every season. But the last couple of or few seasons, it'll bud, flower, the bees will come in, it'll pollinate it, it'll have young walnuts come on it. But it's just not performing like it used to. And I have actually noticed that that there's some fungus growing on one of the boughs, and also this year it's been very wet. There's a lot more moss growing on it as well. I'm just wondering if it's coming to the end of its life, or whether I can bring it back to life again by whatever means, please.
That's a lovely question, and I think we need to address that in a bit of detail. Walnuts are one of those kind of trees that you think you set and forget, and there they are in the backyard, and you bring up the kids and everybody plays around it, and it gets lots and lots of, I suppose, compaction of the soil, and because it looks after itself, it grows so big it looks like it doesn't need any attention. It doesn't get very much fertilizer, and probably you don't bother to water it, and after 30 or 40 or 50 years the tree says, listen, I think I need a little bit of TLC. And I think probably that may be what you need there, Rob. First of all, what's growing underneath the canopy?
Well, it's actually been paved underneath the canopy too.
Okay.
I do know that walnut trees don't like to have their roots.
Well, most trees don't like pavers underneath the canopy. They need moisture, they need nutrients, but just as important is air. And invariably, when you put lots of pavers and the pavers are close together and there's no gaps between them, you exclude the air. So I'd consider, is it possible to remove some of the pavers, or maybe get a paver or two scattered and cut the paver in half so that you've got actually gaps there that you can water, put fertilizer in, but more importantly, you can get some air into the system. And I think that would make a very big difference, removing the pavers. You may be, if you go around the drip ring, is it possible? Yep. What would happen if you took out some of the pavers around the drip ring? And because that's where most of the action, or a lot of the action is. You've got a lot of fruit, a lot of roots, little tip roots, and they're the ones that are needing the air and are using and converting the nutrients and things like that. So air is important. Fertilising, putting on, you only need once a decent kind of a fertiliser. And what I'd be considering is maybe digging, going around the drip ring and have four holes around the tree and go down, probably make a hole 20 centimetres wide and 25 centimetres deep, and put a handful of 2 or 3 litres of a good organic fertiliser in that hole. And I think that will look after the nutrient side of things. And then where you've got those holes, during summer, at least once a month, give it a decent soak. And then stand back.
Okay, well, I'll give that a go. That's a good idea. I might just take out a couple of old bricks, that's what they are there, and around the drip line, and maybe in a few, and just fill it up with dirt, put some fertiliser in.
Yeah, they're lovely trees. They are very, very forgiving, and they respond very well to just a little bit of attention.
Bit of love is needed, Rob. Thank you very much for the call. John's in McGill. Now, you've got beetles and grubs in what, John?
I've got put in a wicking bed because I had little grubs about 2 centimetres long. And I thought, I saw a picture that looked like them cockchafer grubs. So I'm just wondering what I do to get rid of them. I think they attack the roots.
They are in your wicking bed, or are they just in the garden?
I put the wicking bed, they were in the garden, so I put in a wicking bed to try and, I thought, well, that'll seal off and stop them, but they've come in again.
Righto. There are a number of chemicals which are very, very effective. There's a new product just called Lawn Grub Killer. You might take a look at that, read the directions, and just see that is there a withholding period, or there will be a withholding period in terms of your fruit. Probably the standard thing if you want to get rid of the grubs, Bathroid is the old system that was used, and you could use that. Again, read the directions and make sure that you're observing any withholding periods if you're growing fruit or veggies in that raised garden bed. But if you water that into the soil, that will get rid of them very, very effectively. If you can get your timing right, You can also use imidacloprid, but we won't go down there. It's a little bit difficult in terms of getting your timing and getting the application right. So I think either Bathroid or take a look at the new products that are coming on the market specifically for lawn grub.
Will any of those affect worms? Because I've got lots of worms in there.
Well, Bathroid certainly will knock off your worms. Mm. So you may have to sort of say, righto, kill off the grubs, and then the worms, if you've got the right kind of soil condition, will recolonise that area fairly quickly after the effect of the chemical has gone down. But I'll just make a little note just to take a look at the effect of Bathroid on worms and how long it will remain active in the soil before you can use that again.
So stay tuned for that, John. It is important, isn't it? Because when you use some chemicals, they do have an impact not just on the pest that you're trying to get rid of, but on the other healthy, good animals that you really, really want and try and encourage in the garden.
Absolutely.
Anthony in North Adelaide, what's happening to your mandarin tree?
Well, it's been faithful for about 10 years. It's in a wine barrel, and it's about 2.5 metres high. In the last year, basically all the leaves up to about 30 centimetres from the top have just disappeared in all the branches. And the top's got leaves, but, the first couple of metres is bare.
And it's in a container?
It's in a half wine barrel.
Half wine barrel. And how long's it been there?
Oh, 10 years.
10. And in terms of looking after it, in terms of the soil, what have you done?
Well, a few years ago, I dug out a bit down the side, put some new soil. I've put a bit of, nothing major done to the soil.
All right. You are fertilising, I presume?
Yes.
Yeah. And with what and when?
It's some packet of citrus fertilizer.
Okay.
It's not organic, I guess.
It helps a lot if I know the details, because there are so many variables that are happening there. The fact that you dug down the side and root pruned it, did it respond after that at all?
It was doing okay before and after. It was.
You removed some soil and replaced
the
soil.
Yeah, and put some new soil down there.
In the season afterwards, did it respond at all?
Well, that's a good question. I'm sorry.
Sorry that I can't give you the details. Because after a plant has been there for a long time, you get the roots, and the roots will concentrate around the edge. And the best thing you can do that is each year you go down one side and you come in probably 3 or 4 centimetres in a wine barrel and go down as far as you can, right down to the bottom if you want to. And you need a very, very strong paint cleaner or something like that that'll get down and get through the roots and get through the soil. Take out the soil and put in some good quality soil laced with plenty of slow-release fertilisers. And next year you do the opposite side, and then the year after that you do the sides. And so each year you're doing one side. Every 4 years it's been root pruned. That can make a very big difference to the health of a tree that's been in the same container for quite some time. Then it comes down to your regular maintenance. Now, right now, late winter is the time to fertilise your citrus trees. So it should be getting, and if you want what you choose, put on a good organic fertiliser, and then put a layer of compost, and then put on a layer of mulch. And if you do that, you will look after the soil, and if you look after the soil, as the Tollies of this world and other guests on this program say, if you look after the soil will look after the plant. It's as simple as that.
Okay.
Good luck, Anthony.
I think there's hope for it coming back.
I hope so for you, and I hope you're enjoying mandarins soon. Anthony in North Adelaide, thank you for calling. And we'll come back to your calls in just a moment. But we are going to the Royal Show right now. We, John and I, are going to be there for 2 Saturdays. Saturday the 2nd, the very opening. We're the first program that are going to be broadcasting from the ABC stage. And that is in the Jubilee Pavilion right near the southern entrance. So much to see and do there. But the person who who's madly working on getting everything looking perfectly at the moment is the Deputy Chair of the Horticulture Committee at the Royal Agricultural and Horticultural Society. We know him very well on Talkback Gardening. It's Brett Draper. Brett, good morning to you. And how's the organisation going?
Yeah, good morning, Deb. It's going pretty well, actually. I mean, it's hard to believe that it really is only 2 weeks away now. We're having a bit of a reality check, I think. But things are looking good. So our build team in the Goyder Pavilion for Horticulture actually started on Monday. And there's quite a bit of material which is already underway in terms of our construction that we need to put, obviously, competitions and displays in place. And in fact, that's happening right around the showgrounds. It's just transformed in a matter of 5 days. It looks really amazing already.
Brett, one of the beautiful things of going to the show is the horticultural display. And it's a lovely feeling going into the horticultural hall and walking around and just admiring and just feeling the lovely display that's there. And each year you have a wonderful display. But having had that display, you've got to come up with another one. What are you coming up with this year that's going to attract us?
Yeah, look, John, I mean, and that is right. We have to, we do have to evolve as things change. And we like to do things that are, if you like, topical, and also from an educational perspective, because I think it's really important. We've got an opportunity to be able to present the best of what South Australia has to offer in terms of, you know, landscape design and plants, but also be able to educate people on what they can do and give them some messages and some ideas that they can take home and then replicate in their own gardens. So, you know, for this year, we've actually got part of our displays. We've actually got a feature garden competition with four professional landscapers, many of which are members of the Master Landscapers Association, putting on a display. Or four different displays, which will be judged as part of our feature garden competition. So I won't give too many details around what sort of designs they're going to have, because I've seen a bit of a sneak peek of some of these designs, and they look pretty amazing, and it'll give people a really, really good idea of what is out there, and the talent that's out there with some of these designers is just phenomenal.
Absolutely, and seeing is believing, and when you can see it yourself and say, hey, that's a beaut idea, I can do that in my garden. Right, so lovely displays, landscape displays, another feature.
Yeah, John, well, look, one of the things, I mean, within our area, of course, the competition part of it is really, really important. The show is all about competition. And overall, when you put all the competitions together, it actually creates an amazing feature throughout the display. And so whether it is actually cut flowers or bonsai or floristry or floral art, it really, really creates just an amazing, dazzling display. But also, you know, individual competitors get to show off their efforts of what they've been able to do. And we've got really, really strong entries right through the competitive section this year. And in fact, we've got record entry numbers in our school kitchen garden competition. And that's where school gardens are able to enter. And they've got classes like a harvest basket where they've got the produce that they've grown in their garden. Now, they put together in a basket that is then displayed on the table, and it is judged next Saturday at 11 o'clock, and actually Costa Georgiadis will be judging those, as well as judging the scarecrow competition this year. And there's really good, strong entry numbers in the scarecrow competition this year too. It's really spectacular.
That's great. Last time I went, I think Costa was standing in with the scarecrows and scaring the children who were coming up saying, is that man real or not? It was very funny. And Costa will be joining us on the ABC stage at 10 o'clock on Saturday the 2nd. Brett, you'll be thrilled to know that your enthusiasm almost got me over the line in entering a novice competition this year with my moth orchid. I almost did it, but then I just thought of the time involved and whether I could do it, and I decided not to. But you've got me thinking about it for next year.
Oh, look, Deb, absolutely. I'm glad that I've inspired you. I just need to get you over the line. And the idea is, I mean, for people that look, I enter in competitions as well, and I think afterwards, wow, how am I actually going to pull this together? But you always seem to do it, and lots of other people seem to do it as well. They spend hours and hours in preparation for the show to get their competition entries together and put it in. It really, really is a big effort, but it is very rewarding as a competitive exhibitor to see your work on a judging table, even if you don't win an award, but to show off to your family and friends, it's really spectacular.
It's very rewarding to know that the competition section of the displays is very strongly supported, particularly by the school children. Brett, I'm just sort of wondering, do sometimes the people, the kids that are involved with their displays, come back later on and become regular display and enters into the competitions?
Yeah, they do, John, and really that's our ultimate aim. So we like to be able to foster, particularly with our junior and teenage classes within those competitions, we like to foster that as much as possible, because without newer people coming through and younger people coming through, the competition really won't survive. So it's really important that we remain relative and engage with our younger population, and also draw on that interest as well, because, you know, it's something that's really, really important. And there's nothing more important, for instance, with the school kitchen garden classes about knowing how to and growing your own food. I think that's really, really important in lots of facets in life. So we really, really do like to foster that. And one other thing, actually, with those particular school kitchen garden competitions, we deliberately judge them at 11 o'clock on the first Saturday while the show's open, so that the children and the schools and the classes that have entered in there can actually see the judging take place, and then they can actually see the awards going out, which is really spectacular.
Part of the learning experience for
it
them.
It is, and it is, absolutely. And I tell you what, you see every emotion around that table at the time. and it really does tug on the heartstrings, but it is really, really good to see, and we have a lot of fun. And that's what it's all about. We just say to people, it is a competition, but more importantly, it's about having a lot of fun.
It is, and it's such a great connection to nature. Brett, you do need to grow gardeners, and that's what you're really trying to do so much with the Royal Adelaide Show. We look forward to hopefully kicking off our program with you, as we usually do on Saturday the 2nd, and thank you very much for joining us this morning.
It's my pleasure.
Good luck for the next 2 weeks.
Thank you. Our team on the Horticulture Committee are working really, really hard, and I think visitors to the show this year will be really, really impressed with what we've been able to put together.
Can't wait to see it. Thank you, Brett.
Thank you.
Brett Draper, Deputy Chair of the Horticulture Committee at the Royal Agricultural and Horticultural Society of South Australia. We are going to be talking to Maria and Marilyn next, but if you haven't won anything from ABC Radio Adelaide in the last month and you would love a copy of the August edition of the ABC Gardening Australia magazine, call in now, 1300 222 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
It sure is. Maria in Seacliff, you've got a rosemary question. Welcome to the program.
Hello, good morning, love. Yes, I would like to know when to be cut, because I might sort of a fence in the front, or it's the length of my house, and I don't know when to cut.
So because you've got like a rosemary hedge, have you, Maria?
Yeah, but it's high as half, about 3 foot or 4 or 5, if I let it grow any taller.
It needs to be trimmed back, yeah. The nice thing about rosemary, it's one of those plants that it flowers in springtime. The flowers are there in summer, and they're still there in autumn, and often you'll find that they flower through winter. So they've always got their flowers on. And so, as Maria says, when do you cut it back? Maria, I suggest that if you do it any time in the next probably 4 or 5 weeks, it's going to come into new growth. And it means that you're going to have to, if you've probably got some flowers on at the moment, and so you're going to have to sacrifice those. Cut it back to whatever height that you want.
Yes. So I'm only 5'1", so it's higher than me.
All right. Well, just bear in mind, when you're cutting it back, make sure that when you're cutting it back, you're not cutting into dead wood. You'll find that there's lots of leaves and flowers up in the tip end, and as you go down the branch, there are fewer leaves, and then there's just bare wood. If you cut back into the bare wood, and it's an old bush, it may not respond. So make sure that there are still lots of leaves. When you cut it back quite hard if you want to, and it will respond, but it needs leaves, some leaves left on the bush to be able to produce some energy so it can regrow again. Mm.
So a big job there for you, Maria. Thank you very much for calling in and good luck with it. Congratulations to Heather in Edwardstown and Anna in Evandale, who are our magazine winners for this week. Marilyn is in Elizabeth. Marilyn, you'd like to move some lilies.
Oh, what kind?
Yes, I do. I have some black arum lilies that are profusely flowering at the moment, but I have to move them, and I want to know when I could lift them and how do I store them.
Yes. Have they gone feral? Are they sort of...
No. It's just a clump, but they are getting rather congested, yes. Overgrown with the hedge.
Righto. What stage of growth are they? When did they finish flowering, and what's the new leaves like?
They're fully flowering at the moment, John, yes. And they've been there for probably about 10 years.
Right. I think it would be better, if you can, to wait until early autumn. Is that too long to wait?
Oh, for next year?
Yes. The thing is, it's flowering at the moment.
Yes, they are.
And so it's using a lot of energy, and then when the flowers fade later in spring, it's then got to gather energy for next year. So if you chop it back soon after it's finished flowering, it doesn't have an opportunity to renew its root system. But if you wait until autumn, it basically slows down and during winter almost becomes quiescent, and then it comes with nice new leaves and flowers for the following season. So if you can wait, I think wait.
Wait until autumn.
I would be doing that. Otherwise, if you do it now, there will be a setback to the plants.
All right. Thank you, John.
Thanks, Marilyn. We'll expect a call in autumn from you on moving those lilies. Thank you very much for your calls this morning. And thank you for your many, many texts, particularly on berries. We just couldn't get to them all, but certainly very interesting indeed. And I would just like to let you know, if you've heard anything that you'd like to hear again, it's so easy. This hour of the program from 9 until 10 is podcast. So all you need to do is go to the ABC Listen app from Monday onwards, and Talkback Gardening should be there for you to listen back, as are all of the previous programs that we've had. You might find that there's a topic that suits you that you'd like to have a look at again. And of course, if you haven't done so already, sign up to John Lamb's Good Gardening newsletter, JONLAMB, Good Gardening, in your search engine. And it's easy. You'll get, like me, a newsletter in your inbox every Friday morning.
And the feature story is about citrus gall wasp and pruning it now. Most important. And I was going to fit that into the program, but I think you'll just have to read it in the Good Gardening newsletter, as well as reasons why you should actually fertilise now your fruit trees rather than later. Next week, it's the week before spring. We'll take a look at your pre-spring preparations. And until next week, good gardening.